What's your comment on the Russian disinformation campaign?
I got nothing to say on misinformation, but it's very clear the Putin wants Donald Trump to win. Donald Trump wants Putin to win, and so that's what I would say.
Well, it's kind of hard to understand there, but Tim Walz is saying that it's very clear that Putin wants Donald Trump to win. I'm not even sure it's very clear that Kamala Harris wants to win. But Tim Walz is there confirming that Putin is on the side of Donald Trump. Didn't Putin endorse Kamala Harris?
Yeah, Putin definitely endorsed Kamala Harris, and he had no other motives. he's always pretty straight shooter.
Putin's like, gosh, what would be the best for American democracy? Yeah. So is that the question he's asking himself when he's making endorsements?
Yeah. Yeah, when Putin speaks, you know that he's got America's best interests in mind, no matter what. Don't clip that. That was sarcasm.
We'll leave that part off.
Okay.
The YouTube live chat poll for today is, do you fear violence after the election? Yes or no? Go to the Andy Fry YouTube channel. Find our live broadcast that's going on right now while we're live on the air on 97.1 FM Talk. And you can vote in the live chat portion of the live broadcast. Do you fear violence after the election? It's weird how much people are joking about it. You hear the phrase civil war a lot, don't you?
Yeah, there's clearly an undercurrent of actual anxiety about this. Like, people are joking about it because they know, well, they hope. And this is why you see the phrase, man, I hope it's a blowout one way or another. Because if it's close and people have questions, people are going to get pretty ticked off one way or another. I'm not blaming either side there. If it's close, people are going to have questions. And hopefully that doesn't devolve into total chaos. But we saw it we've seen it every election recently. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just people like, oh, 2020. Man, 2016 was a mess in Washington, D.C.
One of the most iconic photos of 2016 was that dude in that long suit coat holding a fire extinguisher after putting out a fire. He had that. He had a MAGA hat on, and he's like in the middle of the street with this burning pile of garbage that he just put out, looking around like, what are you guys doing? I mean, they boarded up downtown D.C. because they knew there would be riots.
You think if it's not close that it won't happen?
I think it'll be harder for people to, I think the motivation won't be there as much because it'll look a little bit more like a mandate.
Do you think that it's more likely that there's violence if one person wins or the other?
No. Actually, in some senses, I think it's more likely that you have little pockets of violence pop up if Donald Trump wins.
Let me interject here real quick. What is violence?
It's destruction of property.
Riots.
It's riots. It's destruction of it's violence against people. I mean, it's really just destruction of whatever.
Mm. Well, you know, I think the people we've asked this question on the poll a little bit earlier this week. But like, do you trust the results of the election? And people don't. So if it's funny how it's like a right wing thing right now to not trust, like it's labeled in the media as a right-wing thing to not trust elections. Hillary Clinton believes she won the election. Stacey Abrams never conceded her loss in Georgia. There are plenty of pieces of evidence, I mean, really with every presidential election, where questions remain past the certification of results and an inauguration, where it's like, well, that election, There was fraud. There was funny business that took place. Like, the idea that Americans don't, on the whole, trust the outcome of elections, and now it's very much so a both sides thing, that we've watched Hillary Clinton say over and over and over again her book, What Happened? And then she explained all the reasons why she lost the election. She thinks it was stolen from her. I mean, she still talks about it. We've heard Donald Trump say quite a bit that he thinks the election was stolen as well. Our YouTube poll for today is, do you fear violence after the election? That stems from people feeling like they had something that was stolen from them. And that's where I think where we are right now. I think a lot of people have a lot of lack of faith. Let's get to our guest. Tyrus is with us, a regular on Gutfeld, Fox News
You're
contributor.
You're becoming my most stable relationship.
Enough said.
Tyrus, welcome back to the Andy Fry Show. First time we've been able to speak to you since you interviewed the former president of the United States and hopefully the next president of the United States, Donald Trump. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about that interview. We've seen it. It's been out there. You asked great questions. You told a side of the story of Donald Trump that nobody else is telling right now, which is the genuine goodness of that man. What were your thoughts on the opportunity you had to interview Donald Trump?
I was surprised by it. When he said it, like, he'd give me an interview, I was shocked. You know, think in your life to any president that you'd, you know, I'm not a journalist. I don't pretend to be one. So to sit down with the president was pretty cool. I think it's something that many years from now, I'll look back on and be like, wow, man, I sat and broke. I was the president. Not only that, some of my ideas were so good, they made the news. So I guess for wrestlers or athletes everywhere that were always, you know, big, dumb athletes or whatever, not that dumb. So he was tough. He didn't really want to talk about what I wanted to talk about. He had no list of my questions because I don't have questions. I said I just kind of have an outline. And it was difficult for him to talk about the positive things he's done. There's a reluctance there, and a respectful reluctance. But given the situation where someone needs to speak on some of these things, because, you know, if you're going to call somebody Hitler and history can – and it's all there to see that there's – that's really the patheticness of the other side's campaign, is that all they have at this point is fear-mongering by calling one of the worst human beings to ever set foot on this earth. There has never been anything close to him. And to just say that is just it's malpractice, and it should be considered against community standards of anywhere, but apparently it's not.
I find it interesting how much we hear from the Biden-Harris administration about how they want to police what people get to say and when they get to say them. And you know, they talk about consequences for the actions of saying things that are dis or misinformation. But watching the Harris-Walls campaign right now, man, they're lobbying some very, very nasty things in the waning hours of this campaign towards Donald Trump. What does that indicate to you when you see these unfounded allegations about Donald Trump coming from this campaign?
They're losing horribly. This election's not close. Here's the deal. This is the week where you are making your final presentation. This is where you put on your best suit, get your hair cut, get your nails done, whatever your hair did, whatever it is you got to do to put your best foot forward to the American people. Like, I'm ready to lead. I'm ready to step in and get to work. And when you have one candidate saying, this is what my plan, this is what I'm going to do, et cetera, and then the other side is going, well, I kind of don't like to answer because I like to research things, and I'm kind of a nerd, and like laughing, and no one else is laughing. And it's like, maybe that's a great job for something else, but to be the president of the United States, nobody wants to hear, well, I'm going to research and study on what Putin just said and did, and then I'll get back to you once I figure it out. I don't think that's the message the American people want from leadership. The fact that you're not informed, being the president of the United States, you should be informed. Being the fact that you've been working in the office and apparently are the last one in the room, and, you know, but yet you have no answers for stuff that you should have been home runs for you.
Yeah.
And your administration. So I think we're seeing where it goes. And if your campaign, all they have is to talk and try to attack the other with baseless claims, shows that your campaign's in shambles. And you have, because you should really be talking about all the exciting things you're getting ready to do. And here's the, and honestly, since you're in the job right now, you could start them now.
Right.
So
what are you waiting for?
Literally could be like, we're already getting started in this one. I'm implementing this one and that one. But the only thing that they've offered to do is apparently for us brothers to make weed free. So, you know, which was a complete smack in the face. And is if that's not identity politics, I don't know what is. And that's the last thing me, any brother, white man, Hispanic man wants to hear about. We'll give you, we'll work on getting you guys free weed and free money. We don't want any of those things. I don't think any American man wants a handout. Maybe a hand up,
yeah.
An opportunity, directions to open the door, but we'll open the door, and when we get there, we'll build it. So I think that's just a disconnect. They think they're still trying to sell free lunches to the American people, and we know there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Tyrus, Chris, you know, I feel like in our, we've been having conversations almost weekly for 6 years now. I feel like your opinion of Donald Trump has evolved with time, but I think that that's the story of many, many, many American voters, that the way that they have consumed Donald Trump over this period of time, that there are things that people understand more about Donald Trump, or there are things that people have just come to appreciate or not be so bothered by with Donald Trump. Speaking to your evolution.
I don't think it's that. I think it's you keep telling us it's the boy you call cried wolf. It's that same story. You told us this guy was worse than Hitler. You said that, and we all got caught up in it. And I was like, well, you know, and for me, I didn't know the man. So I formed a lot of my opinions based off what I learned in from the media, and the media did a really good job of painting a picture of this. And Hillary and them, they did all that. They did their due diligence, and it's the American people still weren't swayed. Now you're running the same. This is the same movie. We've seen it over, and it's not a movie you need to see again. It's not that kind of movie. Like we all get it, and we see it now. And there's no substance behind the stuff they're talking about. So when you call it, when you want to say somebody's Hitler, my argument is you need to be able to prove that in some way, shape, or form. And we're just not, the American people aren't seeing that anymore. We're no longer falling for it. And that for them is difficult. And they don't know how to run on anything else other than trying to say he's Hitler. And it's just the most ridiculous, outlandish and inappropriate thing, not to mention the fact the type of violence it spews from our less than, I'll say less than sophisticated American citizens who believe the stuff that they hear is true, and they think that they're martyrs trying to assassinate the president. Because when you have the White House saying that he is a danger to democracy and all these things, it's pathetic. But we see through it all. It doesn't work anymore. Now, it's always going to work on media, on their TV shows, when they have all the people that are so offended and so hurt, but the average American is not falling for this stuff anymore, and I think we're seeing the panic, and I think it's too late. I don't think this election is close. I think media wants us to think that, so we tune in, but I don't think it's close. There's just no way. The town hall for CNN should have been a layup for her. She had the questions ahead of time and still couldn't, you know, even all the friendly ones, like she knows what they're talking about and still completely unprepared. And I think that's the biggest, Donald Trump isn't the issue for them. They chose to insert somebody who was not qualified because they were running the country on their own with Joe Biden, who didn't have the cognitive skills to stand up for himself, and they were trying to get 4 more years out of it. And Kamala looks like was the perfect candidate for them. She was going to do exactly what they said they were going to do, and she looks unprepared and incompetent. I guess they're fine with that because their idea is, well, even though she's unprepared and incompetent, she's not Donald Trump. And that's their campaign message, and I don't think that hits.
Yeah. Tyrus, last question before we let you go. This is what we're asking our audience today on our YouTube poll. Do you fear violence after the election is concluded?
I don't see violence if in the election. And again, I really feel that this is not a close election. I think President Trump wins in a landslide. But I do think the same groups that when they don't get their way, burn and attack, and what we'll probably will see some of that. I hope not. I hope. But if President Trump were to lose, I don't think you would see anything from the right other than a lot of, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But the violent side is the other side. And usually by people who don't vote, and they're just there just to tear up cities because they have nothing invested. And that typically has been, we've been seeing that typically on the side of the left. I hope everyone can accept the election and move on from it, but that doesn't mean they will.
Well, Tyrus, we appreciate you. We've got hopefully one more conversation with you before it's election day. And so we will have so much to talk about next time. And then, of course, hopefully the results are the way you've been calling them. You say it's not close. And I pray that you're correct on that, Tyrus. Thanks for being with us today. We always love having you.
Yeah, just always a pleasure.
We'll take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Yep. Tyrus is a Fox News contributor, regular on Gutfeld, and his book is out right now. It's a great read. Enough said. Check it out and share with Tyrus on X at Planet Tyrus. And tell him that you love hearing him here on the Andy Fry Show. He's been with us for a very, very long time. I think he's my longest weekly standing guest. Probably him and Hans von Spakovsky. All right, a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Steve Cortez. We're excited to speak with him. He's worked with Donald Trump. He's a former Trump campaign operative. He is the founder of League of American Workers. You can go to amworkers.com to learn more about that. Steve Cortez joins the Andy Fry Show next.
As anyone knows who hosts parties and gatherings, no matter how inviting the rest of the house may be, the people always end up in the kitchen. Kitchens form the true hearth of most American homes, the place where families and friends convene to share not just nourishment, but laughter, even tears, and camaraderie. But today, in 2024 America, kitchens have become a place of anxiety and stress. Why?
Well, that's Steve Cortez speaking on a documentary that you can see on his X account. I also just retweeted it from mine at Annie Fry Show. And we're very grateful to have Steve Cortez on with us right now. He is the founder of League of American Workers, amworkers.com. He's also a former Trump campaign operative. Steve, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you here. There you go.
Spreading the word about my documentary.
I'm sorry I didn't have you up there on the beginning of that comment there after I welcomed you on. So thanks again.
No problem. Thank you for having me, and thanks for spreading the word about my documentary on grocery prices and then pain at the grocery store.
I think that it seems like there's all of this conversation around this election, and then at the end of the conversation, it's like, who's going to help you with your grocery bill? It's kind
right.
of like, at the end of the day, the thing that really, really supersedes all of the other stuff where you have billions of dollars being paid to distract you
right.
from that. Why did you decide to put this documentary together to focus on the issue of affordability of groceries for everyday Americans?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, Annie, is that, of course, corporate media just ignores this issue because I think they realize how potent it is, right? This literal kitchen table reality, not just metaphorical, but kitchen table reality that American families are facing, where just paying for the staples of life, not the luxuries, the staples of life, has become a source of tremendous anxiety. So that's one reason, is I wanted to give a platform to this incredibly important issue. But then the other reason, to your point, is, and this is why sequentially, I actually did six similar documentaries. The reason I chose to hold this one for last is I believe it's the most compelling argument, for particularly for people who maybe aren't terribly political or terribly ideological. In other words, most people who are highly into politics, probably most of your audience, long ago decided who they're going to vote for.
Yep.
And the same on the political left, right? People, let's say, for whom abortion is their number one, two, and three issue, they long ago decided who they're going to vote for. As a matter of fact, those folks, whether on the right or the left, have probably already voted.
That's
it's not
possible.
Just decided, but cast their vote.
Mm-hmm.
However, for a lot of people who aren't intensely political, pocketbook issues tend to be the number one driver. And so that's why I think whatever they think of Donald Trump, whatever they think of Kamala Harris, if they're people who may not call themselves MAGA, may not ever, you know, describe themselves as America first, but they are experiencing this literal pain, this financial pain at the grocery store, and the anxiety of feeding their families, I believe this is the most compelling closing argument to get them to say, you know what, I may not love Trump. I may not know that much about Kamala Harris. However, things have to change because the status quo is simply not okay. It's not affordable. It's not right in a country that should be a place of plenty and lately has become a place of angst, of economic angst.
Mm. Steve Cortez with us right now, talking about especially this important economic issue that faces American voters right now as we are going to the polls in Missouri and Illinois both. Early voting is open. You're encouraged to go early and get that done, get it taken care of. When I listen to Kamala Harris talk about groceries, she talks about price gouging. She puts it on the
right.
the big scary corporations and says that they need
right.
to get in line. What do you say to the what do you say to people who agree with her and say, you know, it's not Kamala Harris's or Joe Biden's fault that this is happening? It's big business.
Yeah, no, listen, it is 100% Kamala, and I'm no fan of big business, by the way, but it's 100% Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's fault, along with their other cronies like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and some establishment Republicans, who allowed them to borrow and spend at absolutely exorbitant levels, forcing up inflation for everything. It's, of course, not just food. People know this. Everything in their lives has gotten more important. So the difference with food is, of course, you don't have a choice whether or not to eat. But like, let's just take the example of energy. Energy prices are incredibly important to food, not just because food needs to be transported, okay? It doesn't get there by magic, but also to grow food. Fertilizers are largely petroleum-based. And but that's also part of what motivated me, Andy, to do this documentary is I profile a farmer, a grocer, and then a very concerned mom. So I sort of went along the food chain from producing the food to selling it to consuming it and showed that at all those levels, there's no price gouging going on. The farmer's being squeezed, the grocer's being squeezed, and certainly the consumer is having a super hard time. So she completely misses the mark. She's making up a ridiculous propaganda excuse. It's not about price gouging. It is about the inflationary policies of Bidenomics, which she fully owns. It's about Kamala Harris's record of punishing working class people during her entire tenure in office and then trying to pretend that she's a new way forward. No, she's the status quo. And when it comes to food prices, the status quo is punishing. And Americans know that. And I believe, again, I would encourage folks in your audience, again, many of whom are probably already convinced, probably already voted for Trump or even have voted for Trump. But for the people in their lives who are persuadable or who are leaning to vote but may not vote, I believe this is the most compelling argument you can use to get them motivated, to get them off the couch, to get them to the polls, and hopefully to the polls early. That would be my other exhortation for the patriots out there.
The website is amworkers.com, and Steve Cortez is the League of American Workers founder. You're also a former Trump campaign operative, and I'm thinking right now about, just to your point, and knowing our audience right here, we have motivated people. If you're listening, you know who you're voting for, and you probably have casted your vote or aren't got a plan to do so. Do you think that there are people out there right now who don't know if they're going to vote for Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, or is the persuasion right now, if you can't stomach the other, you do need to show up and vote for Donald Trump? Right. And this is why. Talk to me about Donald Trump's ability to get these grocery prices back down, to focus on the middle class worker, the mom, the family that's trying to not just make it, we're trying to thrive. Does Donald Trump put us in the position to do that?
Yeah, you know, I believe he absolutely does. And that's why, again, I think you can convince voters who wouldn't consider themselves to be MAGA, maybe have problems with Trump and some of his style, but their life was far better when Trump was in office, and they're willing to admit that if they're being honest with themselves. A lot of those people who are perhaps on the fence or just leaning Trump's way, they can be motivated in these final days. I'll tell you this actually surprised me. I do a lot of polling. Just polled the state of Georgia, where I show Trump up one, so a tight race, but leaning Trump's way. I believe he's going to win Georgia, but I was surprised by this, Annie. 17% of Georgians said they are persuadable at this point. They either just purely haven't decided or they're only leaning. So, I mean, that's a big percentage in a swing state like that who say that they can still be persuaded. I took this poll just a few days ago. I'm polling Pennsylvania right now for my last poll. We'll see what kind of number I get on that same metric there. But I think there are people who will make that decision who maybe don't love the two choices. Again, I'm not in this camp. I'm enthusiastically behind Donald Trump, and I want to return to that prosperity, to a secure border, and the prosperity that we had under Donald Trump. But for people in your life who maybe aren't enthusiastic but can be persuaded, I believe that focusing on those kitchen table realities, closing on what was your life like when Trump was president, when we asked that question as well, that key better off question, in all of the battleground states, consistently, we're getting a 2-to-1 margin in favor of Trump. It's almost always 60-30 with about 10% unknown, but 60% saying my life was better when Trump was president, I was better off, 30% saying they're better off with Kamala Harris, who tend to be super hardcore Democrats who we just can't win over no matter what. So I think focusing on those issues is the most effective way into this final week. If I would add one caveat to that, it would also be that Kamala Harris is simply untrustworthy. You know, most Americans don't know still that much about her because this campaign has been so abbreviated, right? Because of what the Democrats pulled off, because of the palace coup that they pulled off. So a lot of people, if you're not really into politics, you don't know that much about Kamala Harris. But what I think people can discern rather quickly is that she's not genuine, that there's a total inauthenticity to her. And even for critics of Donald Trump, I think they have to admit this is one authentic man, you know, sometimes to a fault. But he is one authentic guy who doesn't speak in a lawyerly and scripted manner. The opposite with her. I think her inauthenticity is part of what's driving this race toward Trump in these final yards, if you will, if we're going to score the touchdown.
Steve Cortez speaking with us right now. Since I have you on with me, and I definitely want to encourage people to go to X. You can go at Annie Fry Show. If you already follow me and you can see, I've retweeted this video. You need to go watch this documentary and consider sharing it as a persuadable tool, just something for people to consider if they are in that undecided camp. But you've worked with Donald Trump. You've campaigned with Donald Trump. You were former Trump campaign operative. And you're seeing a lot of these bottom of the ninth inning reports that are coming out, the Kelly reports about Donald Trump wants generals like Hitler, and now we're getting the fascist right. accusations once again. It is one of the most repeated lines that I get in our community here on this show through social media reactions, and they're all talking about all of the people who worked with Donald Trump in the first administration early on. They've all turned their back on Donald Trump, and they really put a lot of credibility into these individuals who are now coming out and saying, I mean, like, that Trump loves Hitler. That's what they're actually right. saying right now. You've been in this community. What do you know about Donald Trump then? What do you know about the people who are out speaking in this way about then Donald Trump right. and Donald Trump now, the candidate in 2024?
Well, Annie, I'm so glad you asked me about this, because I really believe it. I don't say this in a haughty way, but I think I'm a perfect person to answer this, because I opposed Donald Trump in the primary in 2023. I went to work for Ron DeSantis. So nobody can accuse me of just being blindly loyal to Trump, as much as I admire him. OK, but so I think I have some credibility on this issue. And let me tell you, as someone who's been with Donald Trump a lot in private, in the Oval Office without cameras, as well as, you know, in the public realm, the Trump off camera is the exact same authentic Trump that you see on camera. He is not a different person. And these accusations are ludicrous. John Kelly is somebody who I used to have a lot of respect for. He and I worked a lot on immigration issues, especially when he was chief of staff. I certainly honor his military service, but this just does not in any sense pass the smell test. The fact that he claims he has had this knowledge for 5 years now, and 2 weeks before the election conveniently decides that he's going to spill the tea on Donald Trump, just makes no sense. It's not credible in the least. And to this Hitler accusation, by the way, I think it's important for people to have context, especially, you know, listen, I'm a middle-aged guy, especially for younger people. Please realize that the Democrats have done this to Republicans, called them Hitler, for decades in this country, including some of the most moderate milquetoast Republicans you could think of. People like Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney, believe it or not, were accused of being fascist and being Hitler. So this is just a tired default of the left when they're out of arguments is call us racist, call us bigots, call us Hitler. It's ludicrous. It's offensive, but if we do take any pleasure in it, it's wrong that it happens in this country. But if there's any silver lining to that cloud, it is that it shows their desperation. I really, truly believe that. But regarding these turncoats, I don't believe any of them. And again, I say this as somebody who worked hard for Donald Trump, who briefly tried to take him on in the primary with Ron DeSantis. Of course, didn't work. I'm now back working to get Trump elected again. But I hope I have some authority yes. on, and some credibility on that issue, you know, given my own personal background.
You completely do, especially certainly with me. Last question before we let you go. We're speaking with Steve Cortez. Why were these individuals so willing to work in the Trump administration and to work with Donald Trump then? And now, why are they so opposed or afraid of him reaching the Oval Office once again?
Yeah, that's the other issue that's so important. If they had any honor or integrity, and if these events actually happened as described, they had an obligation to the American people to leave immediately, right, to quit, and to divulge to the American people what they supposedly knew. And this is true of, you know, of a number of these turncoat folks, many of whom have now found cushy gigs, giving lucrative speeches or lucrative gigs on cable news as contributors. If the stories they tell are true, then they had an obligation to reveal them as soon as possible. And why would they possibly continue to work for a president if they thought that poorly of him? So I think, unfortunately, it's Washington intrigue at its absolute worst. Didn't expect to see it from General Kelly. It's a shame that we have, but again, it does not. I think any reasonable person will say this does not pass the credibility test that you would hold on to this information and release it in October before election season. And I will tell you from my own experience with Donald Trump, nothing of the kind ever. I mean, nothing ever was objectionable said around me from him. In fact, quite the opposite, particularly when it comes to the military. This is a man who loves the American military. And I would also add, because that other ludicrous story about him, you know, supposedly disparaging a dead Mexican soldier, nothing but respect for Hispanic Americans, because it's something we talked about quite a lot. And that's true on camera as well as away from the microphones.
Just to make sure I understood you clearly there, are you saying that it's profitable and lucrative for these people to accuse Donald Trump of these things?
Quite, unfortunately, yes.
I think we followed the money, haven't we?
Yep.
Well, you know what, Steve Cortez, you've worked with Donald Trump in the same capacity that these leftists love to see ex-Trump campaign or Trump administration workers. They put all the stock in the world in what they have to say, so I'd imagine that they'd have to give you the same faith and confidence as well. I certainly do on this show, Steve. I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on with us once again.
Thank you, Annie. Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you again. We appreciate you. Steve Cortez, he is, we did interview him when he was working for the DeSantis campaign. If you've listened to the show for any time, you know I'm a huge Ron DeSantis fan. And it was never difficult for me to support Ron DeSantis without not supporting Donald Trump. It's an easy thing to do. There's no litmus test here. Kamala Harris wants to continue to destroy our country with far left progressive ideals. She doesn't love the America that I love. She wants it to be something differently. And she's picking up the mantle of she's picking up the mantle of Barack Obama, who promised and delivered in 2008 to fundamentally transform the United States of America. He started it and he's working to continue it. I'm not even sure it's finishing it because I don't know how long he can go. And if we, you know, rely on what we've heard people say, as we do so desperately when we watch the left-wing agenda-driven media rely on something that Donald Trump said in 1972 on a sunny Sunday afternoon. It's like, oh, we heard him say this. Witnesses say we have seen with our own eyes Barack Obama sit down with reputable, at the time at least, network reporters and talk about how his ideal third term would be where he gets to call the shots with a front man. And now we're looking for a front woman. The fundamental transformation of the United States continues with Kamala Harris. Or you can choose to make America great once again and head it back in the correct direction. You can vote for Donald Trump. Very interesting conversation with Steve Cortez, who worked very closely with Donald Trump and continues to work to get him elected. And going back to that documentary that you can see at Annie Fry Show on Twitter, or just go directly to Steve Cortez's X account at Cortez Steve. That's Cortez with an S. You can see that documentary, watch it, it's 18 quick minutes, and maybe use it to influence somebody who might be a little bit on the fence. It's just good sense to think about your grocery bill and how you can save. Let's take a quick break, get Ryan Wiggins back in studio next. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. The YouTube live chat poll for today is, do you fear violence after the election? Did I ask both of you this yet?
Well, we talked about it. I don't know that we gave our answer.
Brad, what do you think? Do you fear violence after the election?
Yeah,
yes or no?
Yeah. My question is just to what extent. I don't know what extent it would be. I think that if it's a blowout, there will be some violence. I think there will be some wailing and some gnashing of teeth.
I think we need to define when we say yes or no to what qualifies as violence. Like, so murder in the streets, or is it?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm, not murder, but chaos in the streets. Police have to be called out in riot gear, that sort of thing, or a situation where police ought to be called out in riot gear. I think that there's going to be pockets of that no matter the outcome, blowout or not blowout. I think that the problem comes is when it's really close. And if anything just doesn't pass the smell test to most people, I think that we're going to see right or left. I think you'll see chaos in the streets.
So you're a yes?
I'm a yes, yeah.
I'm a yes, too. I don't know that I fear it personally. I fear it for the country that we would see violence. And I would define violence the same way that Brad just did, that you have riots or even just little pockets of people just showing up and causing chaos. That's the thing, too, is that regardless of who wins and who is committing violence, it's a pretty small fringe group of people. No matter which side.
On Twitter, I think it was, I got to find, I want to give credit where credit is due on this, but on Twitter, someone said that they fear manufactured violence.
That is a good point.
And I thought that is a wrinkle that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. somebody putting bricks out on the streets of St. Louis. Oh, we didn't even realize we set these bricks here. We meant to pick them up tomorrow. It was just a miscommunication. They're all over the place for some reason. Yeah, that kind of stuff, that is a huge problem, that there's somebody out there funding this stuff. And there's, again, a fringe group of people who will say, yeah, I'll be a part of that.
I don't know. This is not a challenge, but I don't know if the left is going to have it in them if Trump wins. I don't think that I'm going to say no. I don't fear it. Not in any sort of widespread takes over coverage. We've seen it. We're here in St. Louis. Ferguson is ours. We kind of started it, I feel like, with the Ferguson riots. You want to talk about misinformation and disinformation that is used to manufacture violence. It's like the book was written on it here. The reason why I say that, though, is because I feel like the energy that existed in 2020 to subsidize financially and through not support, but the very willful, you just turned a blind eye to it. I think that America is freaking done with that. I think on the whole, I don't think there's law enforcement in this country right now that's going to sit by and watch their cities burn anymore. I think we're past it. And if Donald Trump is coming into office, and people want to do that, I think like there will be a literally different sheriff in town that will be able to say, we don't stand for this. If you have an attorney general that says that we're not going to allow people to just burn our cities in Baltimore, they created space to destroy for people. I think that we have, if Donald Trump wins, that there will be a mandate to say, knock this crap off and do it yesterday. I hope. And I actually think that we have a completely different social climate for allowing that stuff to fester. It depends on how much manufactured nature there is of it. But I'm also asking myself, what do they have to gain over it?
Well, the proof for what you're saying is that basically every leftist mayor, governor, even the presidential candidate for the United States right now, have backpedaled on these things. And hopefully that's enough to keep them from being opportunists to say, who cares now? Let's just do it.
Let us know what you think on the Annie Fry YouTube live broadcast in the live chat. Do you fear violence after the election? We'll be right back.